nothing about the Mets' character or their magic or their leadership or any of the things that have made this a special season, that their pitching, which they rode to get here, simply appears gassed. You had starters in order to reach this point in the postseason going 5, 6 or more innings routinely past what other teams do in October. You have relievers who have really been working overtime and are down on given nights, who are just not at their full effectiveness. And frankly, you have a Dodger team who right now clearly looks like the best team standing in the postseason. So much better than the Phillies, so much better than the Brewers, and probably better than anybody on the American League side. All those add up to the fact that the Mets, after a very surprisingly successful season, are a game away from elimination. It's not over, although this series has been a mismatch so far. As Brandon Nimmo said, if we came back, it would be one heck of a story. That's true, but what you're really seeing here is a lot of the horses that got them here simply looking tired out.
It feels like you've been here before with the uphill battle in front of you. What is it about the belief in this club that can come to the fore again tomorrow?
If you have no belief, you shouldn't be here. You know, you got to believe. You got to fight for what we want, you know, for what you want. You got to fight for it. And at the end of the day, it comes down to one day at a time and executing. You know, we have an amazing opportunity, and that's a winning a big league game in National League Championship Series. So we got to come out. We got to execute. And we got to play the game better than they do. And if we win tomorrow, then we learn from it, move on.
Does what this group has done over the last 7 months give you confidence?
Yeah, for sure. You know, we've had our backs against the wall before, and now we do again. And so we're going to do our best to add to the story and make some more magic. But, you know, it's definitely not easy, and nothing that we've really done up to this point has been. So I guess that is the fitting part of the story. But we're definitely not going to give up, and, you know, we're going to go out there and we're going to fight till the very end. Anything's possible until it's over.
You have a chance to write another chapter to this incredible season story. Is that something that you believe in?
I believe in this group. I mean, this group has responded so well to adversity all year. I mean, the character of this team, I mean, the one word I can think of the 2024 Mets other than grimace is resiliency. Like, I mean, that's just who we are. Like, we have fun, we enjoy the moment, but at the end of the day, like, we're a resilient bunch, and we respond in a very positive way, and we play for each other. So I have no doubt that we'll respond well and accept the challenge.
That's who we are. We got great players. We got great people. And we know that, you know, yeah, we got punched yesterday. We'll come back today, and we're going to go prepare, compete, and try to get the job done. A lot of confidence on our guys. We've shown the whole year. You know, this is a group that is resilient, that they have that grit. They fight, and they're not going to give up, and they're going to continue to play. So, that'll be the same mentality, the same approach today, and we're going to go out there and have fun.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Friday, October the 18th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Good morning, everybody, here to this reaction edition to Game 4 of the National League Championship Series. Another disappointing evening out at Citi Field. Dodgers 10, Mets 2. And I am coming to you a little bit later this morning. I usually am at the crack of dawn coming to you after these games, but I'll be honest with you, needed a little bit extra sleep, needed a little bit extra coffee, Anthony Rivera, somebody, Shay and I got off of Twitter Spaces at 2 a.m. doing some Mets therapy. And I got to tell you, I wish I could have stayed on longer and talked to you. Some of the best baseball conversations I've had were on those spaces over the last couple of weeks. What an evolution. Something that I never did before. And in times of crisis, and the Mets are in times of crisis, hearing the fans and hearing those that follow on X, this show, and how they're looking at things gives me a lot of hope for the future. And it gives me hope, at least for tonight, because we all know October is a very, very fickle month. It is the highest of highs as a baseball fan. It's the lowest of lows. A week ago, we were just washing the champagne out of our eyes after a brilliant series against Philadelphia. Didn't even know who the Mets were going to be playing in the National League Championship Series. Just 48 hours ago, the Mets had a great game to win, and you dare to dream. I mean, we're talking Subway Series. We're talking about the Mets' first pennant in 10 years almost. And here we are Friday morning, hours before Game 5, hours before David Peterson takes the mound, and the Mets are facing elimination and facing the real possibility that the season of OMG and Grimace and Seymour Wiener and playoff pumpkins or whatever you want to call it may be ending in disappointment. And I'm starting to see some cracks, and maybe it's more of a social media point, in the fan base. I'm starting to see the finger pointing. Mendoza should have did this. Stearns didn't do that at the deadline. You know, you have your favorite WFAN host now talking about the deadline on X. And let me succinctly, and probably you could have listened to the shows from game one and game three and on and on and on and on. The story's been the same. The Dodgers may be better than the Mets, and I think they are. I think that they're the best team in baseball. One of the things that the Mets run since June 1st to the best record in baseball did not include was a chance to see this new iteration of the Mets against the Dodgers. The Dodgers have been doing this for a long time when the Guggenheim Group took over, 15 years ago or so. They've been spending money, building an analytics department, finding useful value-driven acquisitions and players that could, you know, all of a sudden come out of nowhere and win. Core stars performing, big-ticket items. I mean, they've been doing this for a while. The Mets, they're a little bit newer to this, probably only a couple of years. I mean, Steve Cohen's, on year four? And when you look at the two teams, it's the Mets and the Mets muse. The Mets aspire to be the Dodgers. And I think they're a little bit closer than everybody thinks, but maybe they're a little bit short. And when you look at last night's game, it really is a synopsis of these two teams in this two series and why the frustration is there, but also reason to hope. And I know that's a hard thing to sell on you today because it was so miserable at Citi Field last night. It was so miserable the night before. And I said, Citi Field is a great ballpark when the fans are into it and the Mets are using that as a way to put the opposition in the blender. It's a mausoleum, a cold and dark mausoleum where it looks like you have a better shot at hitting the ball out of Yellowstone when they're not winning and when they have games like last night. But the Dodgers had 12 hits. The Mets had 10 hits. The Mets walked 3 times. The Dodgers walked 9 times. And the Mets only had, I think, one extra base hit, and that was Vientos' home run. All season, I've been telling you, these walks were going to kill. And it's like a warning and a prophecy that I kept saying to myself, it's going to get better. And actually, when I looked at the numbers, and I talked about this on the Twitter spaces, the starting pitching from August 1st on did a good job managing their walks. The bullpen all year is not. The only two teams in baseball this year that have walked more batters than the Mets, and I'm not including postseason, are the LA Angels, losers of 99 games, the team that jettisoned Ohtani because he couldn't take it anymore, over to the Dodgers, and the historic 121-loss White Sox, the team that's worse than the 62 Mets, the modern-day version of the 62 Mets. When you're in that company, when you're walking more batters than the Colorado Rockies, you're asking for trouble. And it was something that had disappeared. It was not a factor in Milwaukee. It was not a factor in Philadelphia. But now you're facing a culmination of Moneyball and the evolution of Moneyball right before you with the Dodgers, the team that the Mets want to be. A team that, quite honestly, I've never seen so many pitchers come out there and spin the ball like they do. Everybody spins the ball. Everybody's got an elite slider, it seems like. Every hitter up and down that lineup will play inches with the strike zone. I said they were like the mid-2000s Yankees, or I'll even put the mid-2000s Red Sox. They are. They're better in some ways, that lineup, because they have other components that those teams didn't have, like speed and whatnot. But I'll tell you what this Dodgers version has that those Yankees teams didn't have is they have some good pitching. And maybe they don't have starters that go deep, and maybe they don't want them to go deep. But they have really good pitching. If the Mets are going to win, they were going to have to play much better. I'm not saying they have to play perfect, but you can't make errors, and I got to tell you, you can't walk 9 batters a game. 12 hits for the Dodgers, 10 for the Mets. The score was 10-2. That's not all that common. But the Dodgers, their pitchers throw strikes. Their pitchers put the Mets in positions where you look at it and like, wow, how are they going to lay off that slider? Much less hit it, because you want to get that count to a fastball count. And the Mets are at a point where they have to really say to themselves, we have to play pretty much perfect the rest of the way. And that's asking a lot to even get a game, much less talk about something wild like being the 0-4 Red Sox. But I don't think it's that far off. Asking pitchers to throw strike one, asking fielders to play smart and make the right play. I mean, that Alvarez play killed them the other day. So I don't think we're here looking at a team that's vastly better, a team that is better. I think a team that's a little bit ahead of their curve of where they are as an organization. The Dodgers have one thing left to do, is win a real championship. Deep down, they know that. They're not taking 2020 and saying, well, we won, we got our title. They want to be a dynasty, and that never happened. And I think that's the scary part, or maybe the lesson ultimately if the Mets lose this series. The Dodgers have been at this thing for almost 15 years, and they have one short season BS championship. And they may get one this year, and I think if they go forward, they will. I don't think there's any question in my mind how much better they are than the Yankees and Cleveland. It's the National League Championship Series, and the Mets are playing the Dodgers. Why not have some fun while you're watching the game with Underdog? Take a swing at Pick'em this baseball season on Underdog. Over a million fans across 33 states got in the game last year by making picks on Underdog. Went up to 1,000 times your money just by choosing higher or lower on your favorite player stats, like strikeouts, total bases, and home runs. Look, you're a Mets fan. Take the higher on Pete Alonso and the home run. Take the higher on Kodai Senga and the strikeouts. Why not? If you're a Dodgers fan or you want to make a little money and you like Shohei Ohtani, take the higher on how many home runs the Mets pitcher that day is going to give up. The possibilities are endless. Underdog is super easy to play, and it's even easier to get started. Go to their easy-to-use mobile app or to underdogfantasy.com. Sign up a promo code TALKING, T-A-L-K-I-N-G, and Underdog will give you a mystery special pick to use on your first Pick'em entry, plus a first-time deposit offer up to $1,000 in bonus cash. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code TALKING, T-A-L-K-I-N-G, to claim your new customer special of a mystery player pick and your deposit offer. Must be 18 or older. 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 19 or older in Colorado for some games, 21 and older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Void in Colorado. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342. In New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY at 467-369. I'm playing Underdog Fantasy this National League Championship Series playoff season. Why don't you? And I think the Mets would beat the Yankees or Cleveland, but I don't think the gap between them and those two teams is quite as great as the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers have shown you that they know how to manage, they know how to develop arms, they know how to create an offensive philosophy and put players into it. Their core offensive players are elite, much better than anybody else we've seen, better than Harper and Schwarber and Turner. probably better than Judge and Soto, definitely better than Lindor. And I mean, at this point, you probably put Vientos higher in the pecking order than Pete. I mean, the biggest positive out of last night was, here's a guy, Brandon Nimmo, with plantar fasciitis. You or I have had those kind of injuries, and we're looking like Samford from Samford and Son walking to our cars to go to work, and this guy's beaten out a double play. Tells you a lot about Brandon Nimmo. Tells you a lot about the heart of this team. But this team all year has been begging for the walks to undo them. And it hurt them in August. If you remember, they lost critical games on that road trip, on that West Coast trip where they lost those games to San Diego. And they wound up doing well because they had the White Sox at the tail end of that. Could have been a much better road trip. But losing games to Arizona and San Diego, walks were part of that. Every time they've had trouble, it's been walks. And you just couldn't do that against the Dodgers. And they got away with it on Monday afternoon. How you fix this? A little bit different and a little bit more complicated. Bullpen is an easier conversation. I am not, and I repeat, I'll say the same thing I said during the Twitter spaces last night. I'm not getting to offseason. I won't even get into deep offseason if they lose tonight. It's important, and that's the point I'm going to make about how this finishes out, how this story. You heard Brandon Nimmo say the story is not over. We'll see how the story finishes out, regardless how this story ends. Because this group, this season, deserves some kind of chance to breathe one way or the other. But right now, you have to question. I mean, there's no data that says the Mets could come back in this series. And in a way, it's worse than the 0-4 Red Sox. Because the 0-4 Red Sox got thrashed at Fenway Park after Game 3, and they were down 3-0 to the Yankees. But they were competitive in some of the other games before that. And I don't think that they were walking. I mean, this Mets team has some of the most walks in a National League Championship Series ever. I think they were showing it last night. It's funny, the teams that, like 09 Yankees that have been up there on the receiving end, they go on to win a championship. You walk teams, they go on to win a championship. Now, is it the chicken and the egg? Some of those walks into Ohtani, so you're walking Ohtani every day. That's going to, you know, every time up, that's going to increase the probability of a lot of walks. But they're behind everybody. They're behind Tommy Edmonds of the world. They're behind everybody. They're behind eight hitters. They're behind the cleanup hitters. They're behind the elite hitters. They're behind the nice hitters. They're behind the hitters in that lineup that, you know, maybe aren't so great. But 1 through 9, I have not seen a team that has pretty good hitters up and down the lineup all year. And I think that right now, and I'll say this, they may be the baseball version of the 96 Bulls. You may be seeing, because this is not even a complete Dodger team. There's no Freeman. Yamamoto's just learning. They probably have money to go out and bring in another star. I mean, imagine them with a Blake Snell next year. Even though I'm not a big Blake Snell fan in this rotation. I mean, I know I'm not a big Flaherty guy with health, but if he stays healthy, he's pretty solid. I'm sure, I don't have their prospect list in front of me. I'm sure there's guys in the system. And even if they don't have the best starting pitching, I mean, they're moving away from the Kershaw years here. You know that they're going to find arms that are going to come out of that bullpen and somehow have a low walk rate, an insane strikeout rate, spin the hell out of the ball. They're not going anywhere anytime soon, so you got to figure out how you're going to compete with them. And it's not just going out and signing Juan Soto. Juan Soto can't pitch. Juan Soto can't come out of the bullpen. Juan Soto's one hitter. The Dodgers are not built on one. They're built on a team that, from top to bottom, uses analytics in a way. I would say they're the Tampa Bay Rays with actually money. I don't agree with everything they do, but Tampa, if Tampa had the Dodgers' money, they'd be winning 100 games every year. They would. So, you know, that's the difference right now. They are better than the Mets. I don't think the gap is as great as 10-2, but the Mets have done nothing to help themselves. They don't get big hits. They're not making big pitches. The starters are not allowing the offense to figure these guys out and keep them in the game. All the things that happen in Milwaukee and Philadelphia are not happening here. The Mets were not built this postseason to win 11-10 games every night. But I will tell you, the last couple of nights, they didn't have to give up 8 to 10 runs. Put the garbage time out of the equation. They still were giving up in competitive baseball, where you still thought the Mets had a chance. They gave up 4 runs in Game 3 and 7 in Game 4. They had to be an offense that needed, they needed to be in that 4 to 5 runs a game. They probably needed to score 6 or 7 this series. And that's really asking a lot against the Dodgers. And the reason they have to score that much is they're not managing that lineup any way, shape, or form. I know Max Muncy's a good hitter, but you can't get him out. Even forget about the hits, the walks, you can't get him out once. You can't throw him a strike. We're not talking about inches with the strike zone with some of these guys. We're talking about not even competitive. It's amazing. It's almost like they're afraid to pitch to them. So the Mets have some reflection to do. The fans have some reflection to do, I'll tell you that. Sitting around on X blaming the Mendoza for not starting Jesse Winker or going too long with Iglesias, or whether he started Senga in game one or not, that's not why they're losing. Didn't matter if McNeil was in the lineup, Winker versus J.D. Martinez. What is Winker going to hit? I know he almost had a grand slam yesterday. Wasn't he going to have 3 grand slams every game? They need to play crisp baseball on the defensive side. They need to throw strikes. Throw strikes. What's the worst that could happen? They hit home runs and beat you again? Walks kill. It negates. These walks negate any other conversation we can have about lineup, about anything else about this team. It was going to be tough to beat the Dodgers, but they can be beat. And that's now where you have to look. Because I want you for a minute to put yourself in their shoes if the Mets are up 3-1 today. You'd be feeling good, but you damn well know we'd be saying, hey, I know it's hard to sweep this team. I know it's a championship series, but let's not let this get back to L.A. Oh, yeah, we feel good that you could win one of the next 3, but you don't want a game 7. And right now, that's what the Dodgers don't want. I thought they might play fast and loose with a bullpen game at Citi Field up 3-1. Nah, they're actually going for the gusto. They're going for the jugular. They see Senga involved. They might think Peterson is the old David Peterson, and they're saying, all right, let's make sure we get a pitcher that could go out there, shut these guys down. Because what's the best they're going to do? Hold us to 4 runs, 5 runs, maybe? Mets haven't even really shown that they could get a big hit to get that crooked number. They've had plenty of opportunities. Again, last night, I mean, Nimmo, credit on that, beating out that ground ball. That was a hard hit ground ball, but he gets a hit there. Changes the complexion. I thought when Vientos hit the home run, I was like, all right, they responded. Good. Because you didn't want them to take the Citi Field crowd out. You also didn't want to put too much pressure on them to play from behind. Playing from behind against this Dodger team is tough. You see, the Mets have not, against this pitching staff, not had their opportunities. They just can't get the big hit. I think the frustrating part is you see why the Dodgers pitchers are able to navigate even the Mets' big hitters. They throw strike one. And you want to quibble and say, we talked about it on the spaces, hey, that they're not aggressive at the plate. They're not going after those fastballs. That's fair. I think part of it is they're so pitched so well. There's so much spin. There's so much off speed. I think there's a lot of guessing. I'd just go up there. The Mets have nothing to lose. Because I got to tell you, I think the Dodgers are going to play fast and loose today in a good way. They're going to throw Flaherty at you. They might get aggressive on the base paths. I think that because there's a day off, they're going to go all out with some of their elite relievers who haven't really been used. I mean, Roberts likes to play that. You haven't seen this guy versus that guy. It's been actually learned a little bit about bullpen management. If you have a bullpen that's pretty good, even your 7 or 8 guys in that bullpen, you could play a little bit of that mix and match. It's interesting. Scarcity is one of their things that they think helps relievers. I don't know if you could play that in the regular season, but I hear a little bit about how that in the playoffs. I'm more of a guy like, yeah, this guy do this guy do that. They're elite. Go out there, get it done. Something interesting. Never thought of it that way. So Dodgers are going to play fast and loose. The Mets at this point, why play tight? Throw strikes. Go after these guys. I'm not saying throw it on a tee for Otani, but could you be competitive? I mean, the pitchers are not competitive. And I think throwing non-competitive pitches doesn't exactly help you as you go up and down that lineup. Make it. I mean, look at Danny Young. He wore it a little bit in garbage time. He went after Ohtani. Go after him. Look what happened. He's not God. He may be vintage Barry Bonds. Maybe not steroids Barry Bonds, but mid to late 90s Barry Bonds. But you can still get that guy out. Go after him. He's still going to fail about 70% of the time. What do you got to lose? And the last thing here is I'm very, very curious about the crowd today. Because this team, maybe they're pissing you off because of how they've performed here in this series. Like I said, some of that is the competition. Some of that is the soft underbelly that we knew existed that we thought maybe they cleaned up with the walks. But this has been a hell of a fun season. To cover this objectively, to root for this team night in and night out, they've been really fun to talk about, to watch, to anticipate. They're frustrating. They've created some real sports cardiac moments, but they're a fun group. And they deserve at least the opportunity to finish this thing out with a raucous crowd, with a crowd that has every intent of being there to the very end, whatever that looks like. Getting blown out in the seventh, you want to go home early, it's a Friday night, you want to move on with your life, you want to get away and say, you know what, 2024, I've had enough baseball. I understand that. You spent a lot of money if you go there today. But if you're going to spend today booing JD Martinez, booing everybody that comes out there, every strikeout, everything that happens with LA, you're going to put on a national stage all the LOL Mets and negativity that you've been battling, that these guys have been battling, to put in the trash. Because like I said, look at the Dodgers. Even look at Houston. They stole freaking signs with a high-tech system in 2019. The Nationals had to change their signs every batter, and they lost that series. Look at the Yankees. There were some Yankee teams in 17, 18, 19. They thought they were pretty good, and they had some pretty good teams. Couldn't bring the bacon home. You want to say it's because of the sign stealing? I mean, come on. There was other reasons why they lost to Houston. Just like there were other reasons other teams lost to Houston. It's hard. This is a tournament. It's hard. But you don't want to get to the point where all the progress and all the good vibes is overshadowed by anger because, just like I did, you thought there was no way this group, because of the Magic Carpet Ride, there's no way this group could lose. Think of it this way, if this makes you feel better. You know, I don't want to sound like Kevin Millar here, but you get today at Citi Field, that's a reasonable request, and I think it could happen. I don't think the Mets are just going to lay down and die here. I don't think Flaherty's Oral Hershiser. I think Peterson has the kind of moxie, and he's had the kind of season where he's going to surprise you. You got a fresh Edwin Diaz. You got a fresh Ryan Stanek. You could figure out a way to win today. You got a bullpen game. Why should the Dodgers bullpen game, as good as the bullpen is, getting nine innings, 27 outs from a bullpen, that's hard. And then you have game seven with a Walker Buehler and probably a collection of maybe starters on throw days or whatever. I don't know if Flaherty gets a chance. Again, Yamamoto, maybe he's got a couple of innings in him. I don't know how they're going to play game seven. It doesn't matter. But I do know this. There's a reason why they pulled Flaherty up to today. Because they want to take their best shot. They think Flaherty gives them that best shot to nail it down. I don't think they want anything to do with going back to LA. They know this Mets team, if they're let out of the grave, if they're let off the mat, that they're going to be a problem. And that's why you, as a fan, should go out there today acting as if this is still a series. Because until that final out, it is. And I'm not just saying that to give a goofy pep talk. I just told you the margin of error in a 10-2 game is a lot thinner between these two teams than you think. And it would be horrible to spend the last summer day at Citi Field, if that's what today is, airing out every grievance you have because you're mad that the Dodgers have put on a little bit of a baseball clinic the last couple of days. They're a good team. They're a tough team. If the Mets go down meekly, play sloppy, disinterested. If the Mets go out today and show you they have one foot on the airplane to go to their winter vacation, that's different. I would be shocked if that's what happens. Lindor, you heard Lindor on the way in. If you don't believe, get out of the way. You heard Nimmo. This could still be a good story. Pete, you know, Pete's always going to be Mr. Positive, Mr. Self-Affirmation, Mr. Manifest What You Want. So, nothing good here to report this morning. I'm not here to tell you this is going to be easy. There is a low percentage probability. Best case scenario, Mets have a 20% chance of winning this series. That's probably high. Because you add in all the garbage that they do to themselves, their walks, and poor play on the defensive end of the series. I mean, not all the time poor defensive play, but a couple of times. You don't have any faith. If you were watching this objectively, you're like, the Mets can't win. But it just takes that one domino to fall. Just like on Monday where Lindor hit the home run and the Mets got back in the series and you felt better. You win this game, you go back to LA, it's still a very low percentage chance that you're going to win, but you got to make this interesting. Make the Dodgers sweat somehow. That's the cap right now on OMG Grimace that this season needs. I was around for 99. I talked about this last night on the Spaces. I never remember giving up on that team. Never, never, never. Even down 3-0 to the Braves, I was in the building for Game 3. They lost 1-0. Frustrated as hell. Now, those games were closer, more competitive than these games, even though the margin, you could say, between expected batting average and walks, like, you're rationalizing with data how much closer a 10-2 game it really is. They were actually close with the Braves. I think the Braves were every bit maybe better than this Dodgers team. They had Hall of Famers on that staff. They had Hall of Famers in that lineup. They had plucky component players. It seemed like a guy like Eddie Perez, a journeyman you could never get out. And the Mets made that a series. The Mets were a couple of blown saves in Game 6 away from making that a Game 7 that I think the Braves wanted nothing to do with. How did it start? Crazy win with a bouncer up the middle by John Olerud. A grand slam single in a long marathon of a game. And then Game 6. Now, it can be done. It's hard. That's why only the 0-4 Red Sox have done it. So you're not down 3-0. You have beaten them. You do know you can beat them. You've shot yourself in the foot time and time and time again. Can you get it together for three games? Very difficult. Get it together for one. Start there. And as a fan base, don't make this San Diego Sunday night 2 years ago where it looked like a Sunday night baseball game in June where everybody had to get up early to go to work and had no interest in doing anything more than watching for a few innings. The place wasn't even sold out. If you don't sell out Citi Field today, which I think that's unlikely because I'm guessing that a lot of the tickets were already bought. I think the wild card series, because of the fungibility of what actually was going to happen to that Mets team, I think that was a little bit different. I think when you have a championship series, it's a little bit easier to buy the tickets. And then once you buy them, why not go? But if you're going to go there and make it a miserable experience in the cold and scream and yell all your frustrations at J.D. Martinez or grievances you have against Mendoza or Harrison Bader or whoever else you're pissed off at, stay home. Like, really, don't do that to yourself. This season deserves better. And I'm always one to say it's not positive to go out there and make Citi Field into your own verbal torture chamber. I get that. I'm the first guy to say that. But right now, I really mean that. That's not productive. And you don't want to hope. You think it's goofy. You think that it's all rationalization. That's fine. The data says that this is over. It's probabilistic, very tough. But you start with winning one. And I think that this group, this team, this season deserves this innocent climb that you're experiencing in the next era of Mets baseball deserves to breathe hope and optimism to the very last pitch until it's staring you in the face. It's 10-2 in the seventh. I get it. That's when maybe you wave the white flag. But something tells me that this is just not over. And what I mean by that is I think you have some dramatic moments left. Maybe it won't result in a win, but I think you have some dramatic moments left. But October is so cruel, so cruel. A week ago, you know, we had back-to-back weeks with late Thursday, Friday champagne celebrations. You had all this hope just 48 hours ago, and it gets pulled away. And then the season's gone, and you're like, wow, what do I do? Like, you know, obviously there's other sports, other things, but it's almost like a big part of your daily life taken away. It's a shock. We talked about this after the 2022 season where it was a summer of fun until it wasn't. So, these are hard. I'm not here to do a post-game analysis on the nuts and bolts. You get that at SMY. I'm not here to be a bro fan. You got plenty of places to go there. I'm not knocking that. There's a market for that, not me. I got up this morning a little bit later to do this show, and I kept saying, how do you talk about Groundhog Day? Well, that's how I did it this morning. Talk about how Groundhog Day looks bad. It's a little bit closer than you think. About how there is ways to overcome what basically is the baseball version of going to the casino and playing the house right now. And how you put a proper cap on this season, win or lose. That's the other thing. And I think that's what we talked about today. So sit back, 5 o'clock start. I will be back a little bit earlier, thankfully, with the Twitter Spaces, win or lose. Anthony Rivera, Subway to Shea, Mike Silva, Talking Mets podcast after the game. So you could join us on X if you're an X subscriber. It's free, but if you're on X, you could join us. We talk extemporaneously. It's kind of like a radio show, but it's like two guys talking on the phone or in the bar, more so than normal. And then we take calls and stuff. We have some great callers who call in every night. And we had some new ones from time to time. So we'd love to hear from you. You want to email me, whatever. What's the plan? The plan is to do the post-game Twitter Spaces. The plan is, win or lose, to be here Saturday morning with a recap, off day. And then hopefully we're talking about, can the Mets make history in L.A.? How can they bring home the bacon in L.A. against all odds? But first, it's David Peterson. It'll be interesting to see how they bring Kodai Senga into the fold today. Sounds like they're not going to be starting him. How is he going to handle having to get up very quickly? My feeling is that they're probably going to tell Peterson, you're out one way or the other here, and then they go to Senga. And if he gets in trouble where there needs to be a pivot, they'll pivot with another reliever. I think Senga knows generally when he's coming in, so they could time it. And then I think there's some variability with that where they'll use another arm, maybe Reed Garrett, to bridge the gap between those scenarios. That's the only way I could think about it. I would start Jesse Winker. I think J.D. Martinez is done. The only thing I would do going forward is start J.D. against tough lefty to see what he has left. I know Mendoza feels indebted to him. He's meant a lot to this team. He's meant a lot to this team in the clubhouse. He was a key acquisition in March. He gave you vintage J.D. Martinez maybe for a couple of months, but farther time finally won. Iglesias McNeil is more complicated. McNeil's basically in spring training mode. I think it's asking a lot against this Dodger pitching to have him go out there and get 4 ABs, but that's probably what he kind of needs. You know, maybe he goes one more time with McNeil, but I think he feels Iglesias got him here, and he owes it to him to keep him in there because he's gotten big hits, and he does play good defense. Not that McNeil doesn't. You know, you want to do those things, that's fine. Alvarez, he ain't changing Alvarez. And truthfully, at this point, there's not really many solutions on the bench that are anything more than bench options that will help change the outcome versus the Dodgers. Unless you're going to find Luis Torrens walking into one and getting lightning in a bottle. That's not how you manage against the Dodgers. They got to go with the horses that got them here. They got to go with the plan they put in place. And that's it. And if it's not good enough, it's not good enough. And right now, it looks like it might not be. But what you're seeing, the Mets muse, that's what the Mets want to be across town. They're not there yet. But year 4 of the Cohen era, they're starting to show that maybe they can be. We'll see. All right, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets Podcast Game 4 Reaction Show. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, Talking Mets, no G. Of course, don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@talkingmetsnoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy Game 5. We'll be back with the Twitter Spaces after the game. Reaction show in the morning on Saturday morning. Till then, take care, everybody.